Okay, so this morning I'm wanting to look at kind of the big, broad picture of Joshua and his life and his character and the influences in his life that led him to be the man that he was, and one of his mistakes that we have recorded, and what became of that. So it's just kind of a broad overview of Joshua. So if you would, let's turn to Numbers 14, verses 5 through 8. Can somebody tell me kind of the context of what's going on or what just happened that leads up to our verses?
The spies went into the land and came back with a report that scared the people.
Right. Okay. And so then we get to our verses that we have listed, verses 5 through 8. Aunt Linda, would you mind reading those, please?
Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly and congregation of the sons of Israel, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey."
Go ahead and read verse 9 too, please.
"Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them."
Okay, so what do we learn about Joshua's character from this incident, from these verses?
Well, I'm trusting in God.
He trusted in God. Mm-hmm.
He was courageous.
He was.
They tried to convince the people.
Yeah, go in and take it.
He didn't mind being in the minority and speaking up anyway.
He wasn't afraid to take a stand, right? So what was, you know, initially the odds were 2 against 10, right? You've got the 10 spies who are speaking out, "No, we can't do this," and the 2 spies that say yes. But then later on, if you'll, let's see. Verse 10, "But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of the meeting." So they were going to stone them. So now, not only is it 2 against 10, you're 4 now against Israel. You know, because you've got Moses and Aaron who are standing with you, right? So... but still, that has to be intimidating odds. But he was willing to trust God and to take that stand. It's very easy when things are brought up in our world today, or you're in a situation, to just kind of blend into the crowd. And I'm sure there were people there in Israel who, you know, were like, "You know, they're right. We can do this." But we don't have any record of them standing. You know, we don't have any record of them standing up and saying anything. It was just these 4 men. Okay, let's go on to Joshua 3, verses 5 and 10. And hopefully this wasn't too vague, but you got where I was going. Aunt Lauren, can you read verse 5 and then read verse 10, please?
"And Joshua said to the people, 'Sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you.' And Joshua said, 'By this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Hivites and the Perizzites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Jebusites.'"
Okay, what do we know about his character from these 2 verses? I'll give you a hint. Has he seen any of this happen yet?
No.
Okay, so what do we learn about his character?
He believed
it. Right. He had faith in God. He trusted in God that when God said it, it was going to happen. So even though he hasn't seen it happen yet, he's telling the people, "This is going to happen." Basically, God is, we're trusting in God. God has said it. This is what's going to happen. Did he have any reason to disbelieve?
No.
No.
He had every reason to believe.
What? That's right. What had he seen? Right. He was there. He was there for the plagues. He saw the plagues. What else did he see?
The Red Sea.
The Red Sea? How amazing.
The fire and the clouds.
Right. What else?
The God giving Moses the law. He was there with him.
Right. On the mountain. On the mountain.
They had all seen it.
They had all seen it. That's right. That's right. So what I'm getting at is, you know, the people had all seen all of this happen as well. And Joshua had seen it, but they had completely different reactions to what they had seen, right? The people, it was constantly, you know, they were having to be reminded that this is, God did this, God did this. You can trust in his word. And Joshua just believed. God said it, it's going to happen. All right, so let's look at Joshua 7, 14 and 15. Miss Nadine, can you read that for me, please?
In the morning, then you shall come near by your tribe, and it shall be with the tribe which the Lord takes by lot shall come.
Yes, ma'am, you are.
Yeah. Okay. The tribe which the Lord takes by lot shall come near by families, and the family which the Lord takes shall come near by half those, and the half those which the Lord takes shall come near man by man. It shall be that the one who is taken with the things under the band shall be burned with fire, he and all that belongs to him, because he has transgressed the covenant of the Lord, and because he has committed a disgraceful thing in Israel.
Okay, and then read 23 through 25. You just read. Miss Carol, can you read 23 through 25, please?
Then they took Eliab, the king of Ai, and brought him to Joshua. Now when Israel had finished killing all the inhabitants of Ai in the field...
Are you in Joshua 7?
I guess I'm not.
Sorry.
I'm ahead.
That's okay.
7...
23 through 25.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Yes, ma'am.
They took them from inside the tent and brought them to Joshua and to all the sons of Israel, and they poured them out before the Lord. Then Joshua and all of Israel with him took Achan, the son of Zerah, the silver, the mantle, the bar of gold, his sons, his daughters, his oxen, his donkeys, his sheep, his tent, and all that belonged to him, and they brought them up to the valley of Achor. Joshua said, "Why have you troubled us? The Lord will trouble you this day." And all Israel stoned them with stones, and they burned them with fire after they had stoned them with stones.
Okay, so can you give me kind of the context of what's just happened? They went up against the city of Ai, right? Anticipating that they would destroy them. And what happened? Right.
They weren't successful.
They weren't successful. That's right. Why weren't they successful?
Because he had taken stuff.
Because Achan had taken stuff that was under the ban that he was not allowed to take. And so not only were they not successful, but how many men lost their lives? Do you remember? Verse 5 of chapter 7. 36 men lost their lives because of what Achan did. And then, you know, then God tells them that he has to remove this sin from Israel. So not only does he take Achan, but he takes his whole family. He takes all of his herds all the way down to his tent and stones it and burns it with fire. Okay, so what do we learn about his character from these verses?
He was obedient.
He was obedient.
He was just. He was willing to fulfill God's judgment.
You know, it's one thing to go into battle against an enemy and to utterly destroy your enemy. It's another to have to deal with in-house issues and to fulfill God's commandment completely when it comes to your own. But Joshua didn't show any hesitation. God said it, I'm going to do it. And did it completely. You know, he wasn't like Saul, where I'm just going to take what I want and kill what I want. He completed the task fully. He did exactly what God told him to do. And to some of us, you know, this might have seemed like a really harsh commandment, you know, for us to take this man. You know, I can see, you know, a lesser man saying, okay, I'm going to kill Achan, but his family, well, but is that what he did? He completed God's commandments fully. Numbers 32:12 says that. He says that that Joshua followed God fully is the text. All right, so let's go to Joshua 24:15. Amanda, can you read 15 and then go and read 31 as well?
If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Verse 31. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, and they know all the deeds of the Lord which he has done for Israel.
Okay, so what do we know about his character from these verses?
So he served the Lord faithfully.
He did all the days of his life.
And he had an influence.
He had an influence, and we're going to get to that. Anything else?
Determined.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to number two. So describe the relationship between Moses and Joshua. Exodus 24:12. Susan? Okay.
12:14.
Yes, ma'am.
And the Lord said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you the tablets of stone and the law and commandments which I have written, that you may teach them. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. And he said to the elders, wait here for us until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you.
Okay, so this was news to me. Like, this is one of those things where I don't know how I missed it all these years, but I didn't realize that Joshua went at least part of the way up with Moses when he went to get the Ten Commandments. But what does it say about their relationship in these verses that we read? He's his assistant. So it's more than just a, you know, I'm just going to take this person with me. He's somebody that literally it says minister. What'd you say, Susan? I'm sorry.
Trust.
Yes. He trusted him. Okay. Let's go to Numbers 11:26. Susan Hendricks, would you mind? 26 through 30.
But two men had remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad, and the name of the other Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them. Now they were among those who had been registered, but had not gone out to the tent. And they prophesied in the camp. young man ran and told Moses and said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. Then Joshua the son of Nun, the attendant of Moses from his youth, answered and said, Moses, my lord, restrain them. But Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his spirit upon them. Then Moses returned to the camp, both he and the elders of Israel.
Okay, so to give you a little bit of context, Moses, you know, the people have been coming to him. I'm hungry, we're thirsty, feed us. And Moses goes to God and he said, this is too much of a burden that you've put on me. Like, how am I supposed to feed these people? And so the Lord told him to gather these elders together, and he had the spirit, and they had the spirit, and then they started prophesying. And then we have this part of the story that we just read. Let me ask you, what do we know about Joshua and Moses from these verses?
He was the attendant of Moses from his youth.
From his youth. So he's been with Moses a while. Okay? What else?
They didn't always agree.
They didn't always agree. You know, I don't know if I'm sure that we've all been in the situation where you've had somebody that you really respect that had to kind of put you in your place a little bit. You know, and he says, you know, are you jealous for my sake? One of the things that struck me about this little section was that, you know, even when he kind of stepped out of line, at least to Moses, he stepped out of line a little bit. It wasn't self-seeking. It was Moses there, you know, do something, you know, and it was him thinking about Moses, not him thinking about himself. You know, so many times when we read about people that are sinning or doing things wrong, it's a self-seeking attitude. But that wasn't his motivation in this situation. Any more comments on those verses? All right. Let's go to Numbers 27, 15 through 23. And we are back up here to the beginning. Let's just read 15 through 19. Linda.
Then Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, may the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go out and come in before them, and who will lead them out and bring them in, so that the congregation of the Lord will not be like sheep which have no shepherd. So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him, and have him stand before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation, and commission him in their sight.
Okay, so what do we learn here?
Joshua's going to succeed Moses.
Right, he was going to become the successor. I found it interesting that in verse 18 it says, take Joshua the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit. I did some cross-referencing, and it looks to me like that is the Holy Spirit. So he already had the Holy Spirit at this point, and then it seems to me that when it says that the lay your hand on him, it was more of a just a visual thing so that people could see, hey, this is who's going to take my place once I'm gone. Okay. Okay. So number three, what similarities did you see from the verses that I gave you? So let's read Numbers 14, 11 through 17. And Aunt Lauren, we're back to you.
Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I performed among them? I will strike them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. And Moses said to the Lord, then the Egyptians will hear it, for by your might you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, Lord, are among these people, that you, Lord, are seen face to face, and your cloud stands above them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and in a pillar of fire by night. That's right, Walter.
No, ma'am.
Oh, 17, okay. Now you can kill these people as one man. Then the nations which have heard of your fame will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring his people to the land which he swore to give them, therefore he killed them in the wilderness. And now I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying.
Okay, so what does Moses appeal to when he's talking to God and, you know, saying, please don't destroy the people?
What the other nations would think about.
Right. It's not self-seeking. It's not, you know, the people are going to turn away from me. They're going to reject me as the leader. It's, how is this going to look for you if you don't complete what you started, basically? Okay, let's go to Joshua 7, 6 through 9. Miss Nadine?
Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening, both he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their hands. But Joshua said, alas, O Lord God, why do you ever bring this people over the Jordan only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say, since Israel has turned their back before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name?
So what does he appeal to here in this last verse?
Doesn't want God to lose face with the enemy.
Right. So again, he has that same humble spirit of, you know, this is about you and you completing your word. And the more I read through Joshua, the more I saw similarities between Moses and Joshua and the men that they were and the way that they approached God and talked to God and thought, their thought process about everything that I'm doing is for the glory of God and is for making sure that that he is glorified and that the people around us know that it's God that got us through, not us ourselves. Okay, so let's go to Deuteronomy 34:9. Amanda, 9 through 12.
And Joshua the son of Nun was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hand on him. And the sons of Israel listened to him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. For all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants and all his land, and for all his mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel.
Kind of gives you goosebumps. He was such a righteous man, and all the things that God fulfilled through Moses and what the people were able to see. I mean, imagine standing there at the Red Sea when you have two walls of water that part. Or all the plagues that plagued just Egypt and not Israel, even though they were right there and they could see everything that happened. Okay, let's go to Joshua 10, 5 through 14. You ready yet?
No.
Okay, I'll let you do
that. 5 through 14?
That's a lot.
So the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon gathered together and went up. They camped all their armies and camped by Gibeon and fought them. Then the men of Gibeon sent word to Joshua to the camp of Gilgal, saying, do not abandon your servants. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites that lived in the hill country have assembled against us.
Okay, I'll stop you there. And so so they go and fight them. And then let's go ahead and skip down to verse 12.
Verse what?
12. Just read 12 through 14.
Then Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, O sun, stand still at Gibeon, and O moon in the valley of Elon. So the sun stood still and the moon stopped until the nation avenged themselves of their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Mishar? And the sun stopped in the middle of the sky and did not hasten to go down for about a whole day. There was no day like that before it or after it, when the Lord listened to the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. Then Joshua and all Israel with him returned to the camp to Gilgal.
Okay. How amazing this would have been to see. And to know that, you know, as an Israelite, to know that Joshua spoke to God and asked for the sun to stand still, and it happened. And then for, you know, this next verse where it says, there was no day like that before it or after it when the Lord listened to the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. What similarities do you see between Moses and what we just read and this account?
God really thought a lot of him, both of them.
To listen to him when he asked. I mean,
and they had a lot of trust in him.
Anybody else?
Well, it said that Moses, no prophet had arisen like him. So that's not exactly the same as what it says about Joshua.
Correct.
It said, I mean, God fought for Israel in Moses' day as well.
Right. Right.
They were both, you know, led into battle. I mean, they both led Israel into battle.
Right. They were. I guess it just kind of struck me when I was reading how closely God was tied to Moses and to Joshua. You know, when God was fighting for Israel in both situations, in both instances, with both men, and how their trust and reliance on God and God's care for them because of it. Does that make sense? Okay.
It comments on Moses that there isn't a heaven and a prophet since that God knew face to face. And I don't know that it ever says anything quite like that about Joshua, but they were both, like you said, in very close connection to God.
Right. Okay. I also see in Joshua the power of, back to what Susan said, of that positive influence. You know, if Joshua was with Moses from his youth up, and he, you know, all this time that he's gotten to spend with Moses and be influenced by him and to help shape him into the man that he became. And I guess that's kind of where I was going to, was seeing some of the similarities between them, was because Joshua was with him through him leading Israel, and he acted, I would think, as a mentor to Joshua and the man that he became and the leader that he became to Israel after Moses died. And, you know, it was interesting to me that Moses didn't, you know, nudge God and was like, hey, Joshua would be a great leader after me. He goes to God and he says, you know, if I'm going to die, then somebody needs to lead. Who do you want that to be? He goes to God and asks him, who do you want to lead after me? Going back to that humble spirit again. And God says, well, you take Joshua and you let him be the leader and you let him go in and out before the people. So what does this speak to us? Like, what can we do with that example? That's a bad question. We can choose good influences in our lives, okay? Even among Christians, there are going to be people who are going to be good influences on you and people who are not going to be good influences on you. People who are going to help you to be a better person, to help you serve God more, to help you to increase your knowledge, to rebuke you in times of, hey, maybe that wasn't the best call, you know. And then there are going to be people who are going to be like, it's okay. You can do whatever, you know, and not really, what we say, you know, stick your head in the sand and not say anything when something needs to be said. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 15:33. Susan, can you read that, please, when you get there? Yes, ma'am. So we're all really familiar with that verse, but it just goes to speak to making sure that we're putting good influences in our lives. And then you also don't want to discount the influence that you have on other people. Whether you're a grandmother or you're an aunt or you're a mom, or it's just you're just somebody that somebody runs across. Maybe it's your neighbor. And they see you get up every morning and come to services on Sundays and go back on Sunday night and go back on Wednesday night, and you're here at every service. You don't know what that can do for the people who are watching you. I just heard a story here recently about a little boy that lived next to a family, and he was in an awful, awful situation. Parents drink and cuss and yell and scream, and it's done on the front porch, and, you know, I mean, it's just, he's not in a great situation. And the couple that lived next door befriended him, started talking to him about, hey, you know, your grades, getting your grades up and how you're acting at school. And, you know, you don't have to grow up like that. You can grow up where you're treating your kids better than this and you're not yelling and screaming. How does it make you feel? Let's try not to be that way when you get older. And that conversation rolled into spiritual conversation. And the next Sunday morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, knock on the door, can I go to services with you? And they took the little boy to services, and he's still going today. And so you just never know what you can say or how you can influence the people around you. And it doesn't have to be family. It can be the next door neighbor. So you just got to be careful with what you do so that you're setting that good example. Okay, so quickly, because I'm running out of time, let's go to Joshua 9 and see what Joshua's mistake was in Joshua 9. For the sake of time, I'm going to give you kind of a brief overview. So they've started to come into the land of Canaan, and they're taking over the lands. They're destroying everyone that's in their path, just like God told them that they would. And then we get to let's read verse 3. Can you read just verse 3 for me?
When the inhabitants of Gibeon heard that what Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai.
Sorry, keep going. Go to.
They also acted craftily and set out as envoys and took worn out sacks on their donkeys and wineskins, worn out and torn and mended, and worn out and patched sandals on their feet and worn out clothes on themselves. And all the bread of their provision was dry and had become crumbled.
Okay, you can stop there. Okay, so it says that they acted craftily. You know, from their point of view, this was smart. Like, these people are coming in, they're destroying everybody. It's better to be servants, which is what ends up happening later on. He says, look, just make us servants, make us slaves, but don't kill us. He made Joshua and the elders make oaths with the Gibeonites, and then they found out, hey, they're living in our land, and we were supposed to utterly destroy these people, but we've made an oath. So what do you do now? Well, we can't kill them because we've made an oath to God that we weren't going to. So we have to leave them here. We don't have a choice. So So that's what they ended up doing. Now, what was wrong with what Joshua did?
He didn't ask for God's counsel.
Let's read verses 14 and 15. Aunt Linda.
So then Israel took some of their provisions and did not ask for the counsel of the Lord. Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the leaders of the congregation swore an oath to them.
Okay, so back in Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 4, I'm going to read that real quick. When the Lord your God brings you into the land where you are entering to possess it, and clears away many nations before you, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and nations greater and stronger than you, and when the Lord your God delivers them from before you, defeat them, then you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show them no favor. Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. Okay, and then let's turn, I want y'all to turn here, to Joshua 15:63. Aunt Lauren, can you just read that one verse, please?
As for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out. But the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem to this day.
So I looked into different versions, and they all said basically the same thing, that they could not drive them out. Now look at 17 verses 12 and 13. Nadine.
But the sons of Manasseh could not take possession of these cities because the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. And it came about when the sons of Israel became strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely.
So at this point, instead of doing what God told them to and driving them out completely, they made them servants, okay? And then Judges 3. Okay, so I'm going to read verse 1. Now these are the nations which the Lord left to test Israel by them, that is, all who had not experienced any of the wars of Canaan, only in order that the generations of the sons of Israel might be taught war, those who had not experienced it formally. And then it tells the next verse 4. They were for testing Israel to find out if they would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he had commanded their fathers through Moses. Verse 6. They took their daughters for themselves as wives and gave their own daughters to their sons and served their gods. And then we know what happens through the whole book of Judges. It's just a continual circle of given a judge. We are successful, we go back into our ways, and it's all just one big circle. But it says that the men led them astray, and they forgot, that's what it says, it forgot their God. And God told them that this is what was going to happen if they left people in the land and if they intermarried, and that's exactly what happened. You know, it was interesting to me that it said that the God left these people here. It says that the Lord left them to test them. And it kind of reminded me of, you know, Adam and Eve and their situation. You know, God could have made the garden where there was no chance for them to sin, where they could have just always obeyed him and never left that chance of them choosing to sin. But he put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil there. This kind of reminds me a little bit of that, in that, you know, God wants them to prove themselves. Are you going to listen and do what I said, or are you going to continue on this path? All right, and in the last couple of minutes I have, what do we learn from this mistake? Ma'am?
Obey God.
Obey God. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
We have to base our decisions and choices on His Word. And I don't know about the time, Adele, but a lot of times we need to take the time to contemplate and pray and meditate on a situation. Sometimes we just kind of do it.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? One of the other things I wrote down was to do not be deceived. You know, there are going to be people out there who, the descriptive word of the Gibeonites were crafty. The same word was used of the devil in the Garden of Eden. You know, they were crafty. They were smart about how they went about doing this. And from their point of view, it was the smart thing to do. It's better to be a servant than dead. So, how are we not going to be deceived? Carol hit on it a second ago. We've got to be studying. We've got to know the Word. We have to know what God wants of us in order to not be deceived. Isaiah 55:9. Does anybody know what that says? It's the verse that talks about God's ways being higher than man's ways. We have to trust that God is the Creator and that He knows us and our situations better than we do. And just like Joshua, if God says it, we do it. And He knows the possible outcomes of what things, you know, our actions lead to, where we don't know. I mean, we don't have that insight. We don't know what can happen and what can happen down the road if we take one route. And so God tells us to do this, and so we do it. We also need to keep in mind, you know, Luke 19:10 tells us that Jesus came to seek and save the lost. He doesn't want anybody to be lost. He only has our good intentions, the best intentions for us at heart. So if God says it, it's for our good. It's not something that we have to question. You know, if the Bible says for us to do it, we just need to do it. Any other comments before we end?
I know sometimes, you know, in the working area, a lot of times someone will offer you something that sounds really, really good, but there's also a good side, and, you know, it may be a really great job, but, you know, if you have to spend a long time out of town or working late or spending more hours at work,
except for when it comes to God. And I think that probably our, because of our self-preservation mode here, it becomes more difficult to open yourself up and say, God always has the best intention for me. And even though I may not understand it, it's like the whole baptism thing. I don't know why God chose for us to be baptized in order to be saved. He just did. So we do it. You know, I mean, it's knowing that He always has our best intentions and keeping that in the backs of our mind when we're making decisions, go back to the Bible and figure out what His Word says and just do it. And regardless of the consequences, regardless of what happens, it's always going to be for our good, for our spiritual good. Anything else?